Mother's Day just around the corner. Call Kuhn Flowers and send Mom a beautiful floral arrangement. She'll love it and she'll love you. This is Dan Hicken, and Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we are off. We get one night closer to the NFL draft. You can finally smell it. 24 hours away times what? Two. Never too good at math, but I believe that would be 48 hours away. Unbelievable. And, you know, Cliff Kingsbury today, who I think is, you know, was in way over his head. And I think that that is fair for any first-year head coach. But, I mean, here's a guy who was quoted again today as saying, we have no idea who we're going to pick. We have not decided yet. What are you talking about? I mean, how many man hours, excuse me, people hours have you put in since the Senior Bowl? Heck, the East-West Shrine Game before that, the Senior Bowl. The scouting, the NFL combine, bringing people in for visits. I understand you're weighing your options. I understand that if a team dangles you an incredible offer, kind of like what we saw today that Seattle received in Kansas City in the Frank Clark trade, which I'll get into momentarily. Yeah, I understand that. You're looking at proposals. You're considering scenarios. If a team blows you off your feet, for a trade to move up at number one. But are you kidding me? I mean, you still don't know who your team is going to draft after all of the effort and all of the time that is spent. How could you possibly not know who you're going to select? Maybe that's why the Arizona Cardinals are notoriously a bottom feeder in the National Football League. I know they had that one Super Bowl run a few years ago with Bruce Arians. That's actually going back nearly a decade ago. Now, I know the other side of it. Maybe this is just some talk. Maybe he says things like this to try to create a little bit of, some more supply and demand because he is holding the cards overall with the number one pick in the National Football League draft. But that's a question that I would never ask when we met yesterday with Tom Coughlin and Dave Caldwell and Doug Marone. I don't know if anyone asked that question. All right, but obviously the work is done. The effort has been put in. The analysis is there. The only thing that can possibly affect the draft status now of any player who will get selected on Thursday night is of a negative situation. Someone gets arrested. There's a late story that pops out that happened here, happened there, even going back years and years ago. And frankly, we see quite a bit of this. The week of the NFL draft, somehow, somewhere, something comes forward that is filled with a lot of negativity. And the end result will be that a player will take a free fall. You know, it's happened forever in the NFL draft. I mean, look at some of the guys who have fallen. Thurman Thomas, I think of. Warren Sapp, I think of. Heck, even last year, the situation with Derwin James. Look at how far he fell. Why did he fall that far? I don't think it was anything that was character-related, but all of a sudden, right before the draft, people were wondering, is he helter-skelter out there? Looks like he plays with his head cut off. I think that others who followed the situation knew that it was just awful coaching at Florida State, and they were trying to do way too many things with Derwin James. Oh, we're going to send him off the edge. Oh, we're going to send him up the... Instead of just having him do one thing, and Gus Bradley got a hold of him and simplified things a little bit, or at least taught him. And I think that was the difference there. But that just kind of blew me away today. Cliff Kingsbury still doesn't know who his team is going to draft. I mean, how can you put out such a foolish comment like that? Everyone in the world has gone through a mock draft. Everyone in the world here in Jacksonville knows who they would pick if they were at the table at number 7. Now, That's a different story because six guys are going to go before the Jaguars select at number seven. But when you're number one, what more could you possibly need to do in order to decide who you're going to pick? So anyway, just really surprised and not disappointed, but again, I think it really does reek of being a first-year head coach and a guy that was very one way in the college game. I mean, at Texas Tech, he won games 53-48, and he lost games 53-48. He was fired there, and he looks good. He does the part. And because of Coach McVay, he's created a situation now where young, aspiring young people are going to learn on the job as becoming a head coach. Some will say some presidents have done that, but I will not go politics with you tonight. I won't do that as we go into the night with Rick Ballew. All right, glad you're with us. We are just barely underway. 1010XL and 92.5 FM. We push things back a little bit here on Tuesday night for the ladies of the evening. Helmets and Heels, they just provided for you a couple hours worth of their draft expertise. Now I'm going to attempt to do the same. Joe Marino is going to join us here momentarily. Does an unbelievable job for the Draft Network. And want to pick his brain. I feel very comfortable right now that the Jaguars are either selecting a three technique in Ed Oliver, if he's available, or TJ Hawkinson, the tight end that I have wanted now for more than 2 months. I've been on the TJ Hawkinson situation since the day they signed Nick Foles. He has been my guy. He has been my pick. I asked the question to Caldwell. I asked the question to Coughlin. I got the classic, we're going to take the best player available type of answer. Coughlin got a little bit more expressive later on during the interview process yesterday. It wasn't a flat denial. And I think that's encouraging. If you're one of those tonight that does fully believe that the only way that the Jaguars are going to move forward is if you fill up Nick Foles with a ton of weaponry. And he doesn't have it right now. He certainly doesn't have it right now at tight end. And the Jaguars have been last in attempts and last in completions the last couple of years. And we've looked at the numbers of Nick Foles. Okay, I think there's a lot of optimistic feels about him being able to throw the football downfield. And that's all well and good. Do they have a guy? Do they have a guy they can pass and catch with at this particular time? Maybe the former Georgia kid that he just picked up. He ran a what? 4.38 back when he was coming out of Georgia. Could that possibly be the case in Connolly? Could it be the case with Chark, who can run and is arguably one of the fastest players in the NFL? But he certainly didn't show that he could do that a year ago. Nick Foles, his ratio of under 10 yards or less is as accurate as any quarterback that we've seen in pro football over the last 2 years. What does he do? Loves to throw to the tight end. Loves to throw to a running back out of the backfield. TJ Yeldon signed yesterday with the Buffalo Bills. Who's going to catch balls here? Tom Rawls? Al Blue? Benny Cunningham? You know, those are your choices. I don't think you're going to lean on Leonard Fournette as a guy that you really believe is going to be a guy that you can look at to catch three, four, five balls a game in that particular situation. No, you need a bona fide third down back and a guy who's going to catch the football. So that's later in the draft. But get Foles some targets. So those would be my two. And the question remains, will Ed Oliver even be there at number six? Number seven. We don't know. TJ Hawkinson, we have to believe, absolutely will. It would take a shock of all shocks for him to go into six slots before when the Jaguars do end up selecting. So we'll get into that tonight. That's going to come up here on the show. Looking forward to getting a little bit closer to the draft and talking about things that will happen. I think we're going to see some trades. I mean, Arizona at one. It was Prisco, our friend, who over the weekend said that Arizona was not signed and it was not a deal with Murray. And then it was Peter King who came out and said that he was hearing the exact opposite. All right, it's pretty two very credible NFL types going the exact opposite way here. Does Arizona move that pick? Does San Francisco do it for the second time in 3 years? You know, what do the Jets do at number three if the, let's say, two great defensive players happen to go that the Jets covet at this point after they got themselves a quarterback last year in Sam Darnold? You know, over the last first-round draft picks that have gone, and I believe it's the last four drafts, if you look at the 12 quarterbacks that have been selected in the first round, 11 of those went because a team moved up for a trade. The only first-round pick where there wasn't a trade for it was with Baker Mayfield a year ago in Cleveland. Every other pick a team has moved up in. You know it's going to happen again this year. And it appears that the arrow is dropping down for Haskins. And if Arizona doesn't get Murray at one, the arrow is pointing down there. All of a sudden, it's apparently pointing up for Dan Jones. It's apparently pointing up for Drew Luck. It's just amazing how we've been spending, again, really months on all this. And then in the 11th hour, things begin to take a little bit of a change. So that's something to keep your eyes and ears on as we get closer to Thursday night. And, you know, I think it's only been one draft in the last 12 where a quarterback has not gone in the top five. You know it's going to happen regardless of what Arizona does do. Other teams will move up. What was the situation a year ago? Sam Bradford acquired by Arizona, right? Well, they still moved up to get Josh Rosen. Buffalo brought in, the Jets brought in McCown. Heck, they brought in Bridgewater before they moved into New Orleans. They drafted Darnold. Ty Taylor obviously was brought in as a free agent to be the guy in Cleveland. And then they went ahead and they drafted Baker Mayfield. So, you know, gets us back to kind of Nick Foles here, or maybe Joe Flacco in Denver. Or maybe Fitzy in Miami, just because teams spent money, went out and acquired quarterbacks via the free agency route, doesn't mean they're not still going to explode with a quarterback selection in the first round. Look what happened last year. It's unbelievable. And again, 11 of the last 12 in the first round of quarterback, the only exception to the rule was Baker Mayfield. That is unbelievable. But that's the way that this game is going. Teams panic. Teams will move up. Teams will end up drafting a quarterback ahead of where they're supposed to go. That's just the way that it works. All right, Frank Garcia signs a huge deal. The trade from Kansas City now via Seattle. Frank Clark. Frank Garcia is the former center under Mark Brunell at UW and went on to have a nice career for the Carolina Panthers, also a heck of a golfer. I think he was 7 over when I played with him back at the Players Championship at Sawgrass. Let's say circa 1998, maybe, when Garcia came back for the Mark Brunell Golf Tournament. Frank Garcia does local radio right now as well in Charlotte and does a good job. He's a really good guy. I go on with those guys quite a bit in Charlotte whenever there's something big going on. You know, whether it's Jags related, typically Florida State related. But anyway, it's Frank Clark is the guy I'm looking for. $105 million over the next 5 years. He came in a year before Yannick Ngakoue. Looked at some of the numbers in the last 3 years. Clark, 31 sacks. Ngakoue, 29.5. Quarterback hits. Last 3 years, Clark, 66. Ngakoue, 70. Yannick Ngakoue is going to get paid enormous amounts of money. We'll come back, we'll discuss that a little bit. Also fetching two first-round draft picks, albeit not frontline first-round draft picks. These could basically end up being close to second-round draft picks. This year's pick is the 29th overall that Seattle gets in return. And if Kansas City puts up the type of numbers and has the type of season I think we all envision, Seattle's pick next year will be a lower pick as well, and that is a second-round selection in 2020. So overall, I think Kansas City really made out. It does make you wonder, why didn't they pay Dee Ford? But they believe that this guy, Frank Clark, is going to end up being a tremendous addition to their defensive line after a tough offseason. They lost some very good football players off the defense in KC. All right, we got a lot to do tonight. A lot of Jaguar stuff. Keep you updated on everything that's going on in Game 7. Toronto was just scored. Damn it! I hate being on the freaking air when my team is on like this. Boston had a 2-0 lead, but they now have surrendered a goal to begin the second period. So here comes Toronto. It is now 2-1 Boston. I'll keep you updated on that. And then, of course, tonight you've got Dallas and you have got Las Vegas. There's nothing better in sports than a Game 7 in the National Hockey League playoffs, sudden death style. Tomorrow night as well, you'll get a good one between Carolina and the defending cup champion, Washington Capitals. So we'll get a Game 7 as well coming up on a Wednesday night. Joe Marino for the Draft Network is coming up next. Let's get things rolling with Draft Talk as we go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, let's talk the NFL Draft. Less than 48 hours away. It's kind of a good feeling after we've been predicting for the Jaguars' sake, since about when? Mid-November? Unbelievable. That's what a 5-11 year will do for you. It's freaking Joe Marino. He joins Rick Ballew. He, of course, is the senior NFL draft analyst with the Draft Network, which you can get by going on Twitter or just go to the website, which is Draft Network, thedraftnetwork.com. Great to have Joe back with us on the show. Joe, how you been?
Hey, I'm doing good. Looking forward to the speculation finally being over here in just a couple days.
Yeah, I read Cliff, you know, Kingsbury's comments a little bit earlier today. So they still don't know who they're going to pick. I mean, come on. They've had days and weeks and months. I mean, I can understand weighing options and waiting for a deal that blows them away, but teams at this point have to know, especially the number one pick of the draft, who they're going to select.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting comment that he made, kind of insinuating that maybe the door was open still. But, you know, look, this is a team, like you said, has had months to prepare for this, have met with all the players. You know, literally the hay is all in the barn. They know who they're picking. I just don't think they wanted to admit that they know who they're picking.
What do you think is going to happen, number one, there Thursday night? Are they going to go with Murray or are they going to go with Bosa?
You know, it's still my belief that Kyler Murray is going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. And, you know, I feel like maybe some of the information that has been put out lately has been to potentially indicate to some teams that maybe the Cardinals aren't as firm on the Kyler Murray thing and maybe open up that opportunity for a trade. But I still think it's going to be Kyler Murray.
Yeah, and, you know, every year we see moves, we see trades, teams move up, they get desperate, and they believe they have to make a move for a quarterback. The Haskins situation has been interesting to me. Apparently he's been dipping, and now all of a sudden you look at others who are maybe moving up, including Drew Luck, including maybe Daniel Jones. What's your read when it's all said and done as far as quarterbacks? How do you think those four will go as far as the order?
I think you're going to see Kyler Murray go number one to the Cardinals. I think the next quarterback off the board is going to be Dwayne Haskins to the Cincinnati Bengals at number 11. I think you'll then see Drew Luck come off the board to the Washington Redskins at 15. And then Daniel Jones, I think he's going to be a Giant. I don't know if that's going to be at 17 or if they're just going to go get their guy at 6. But that's kind of my read on where I think they're going to go. And I think it probably could go in the order I just said.
All right, Joe, the way I've looked at the NFL draft has always been this, because I love this story that the Giants may not get their quarterback at 6. They may wait till 17. If you're using a first-round draft pick on a quarterback, in my opinion, he's a franchise guy. So if they know that they have their guy, why wouldn't they get him at 6? Why would they settle on getting him at 17?
I think I certainly agree with what you're saying. If that's the guy that you're going to hit your wagon to be your franchise quarterback, you're going to take him in the first round. It's a peculiar position to be in to wait until your second first round pick to draft him. And I certainly get that that's funky. I think what this comes down to is, you know, the Giants are a team with a lot of holes, and they particularly have some on the defensive line. And I could see them going with that defensive lineman at number six. And then maybe they like Daniel Jones, but I'm not sure it's enough for them to take him at six and not get that help on defense. What that does say to me is that they're not that crazy about Daniel Jones that they have to have him at six. So it raises its own set of questions. I certainly understand that. I feel like that they're willing to risk it, if that makes sense.
Joe Marino, our guest, joining us is the NFL's senior NFL draft analyst for the Draft Network. I'm Rick Ballew with you tonight until 10 o'clock. All right, let's get to the Jags. The brass we met with yesterday, Dave Caldwell, Tom Coughlin, Doug Marrone. And, you know, I asked them the obligatory, is the seventh spot, it typically is not there for a tight end. And I was obviously referencing TJ Hockenson, and I got the classic, we're going to get the best guy on our board type scenario. Now we're less than 48 hours away. How real do you believe, Joe, that the possibility is that the Jaguars could get him at number seven?
I think if they want to draft him at number seven, he'll be there for them to take. You know, what I'm trying to weigh in my own mind as I try to put my final mock draft together, which is due tomorrow, is whether or not that's going to be an offensive tackle. And if that offensive tackle's name is Jonah Williams or Jawan Taylor. So I think that Jacksonville is going to have their pick of probably all three of those guys. Those are the three names that I believe will be the pick. And trying to understand if, you know, this Jaguars brass believes in taking a tight end that high is something that I am having a hard time gauging. Although, you know, you can think about Nick Foles and what made him successful in Philadelphia. A lot of that was having good tight ends to throw to and having Zach Ertz. And then this past year, having Dallas Goedert and targeting tight ends frequently. And right now you look at this Jaguars depth chart, you don't see that type of quality. And so if they want to replicate those same ingredients that made Foles successful in Philadelphia, you could see tight end being the pick, but are they going to be able to walk away from potentially the top offensive lineman in the draft right there at number seven?
You know, out of the three that you mentioned, being here in SEC country, I've seen Taylor play a ton. Obviously I've watched Alabama play about every game, learned a lot about Hockenson during the draft process. But, you know, my opinion on this, and I trust your analysis and how you have things ranked, I think Hockenson as a tight end is better than any offensive tackle that is available in this year's draft.
Well, I think I probably have all three of them pretty similarly rated. They're probably all right in my top 10. So, you know, I'm not sure that I convincingly agree with that statement, although I will say that I think TJ Hockenson has the upside to be a stud. And, you know, tight ends being able to attack the middle of the field and stretch the defense down the seam and really cause matchup problems does so many things for your offense as a whole. Opens up things out wide, potentially opens up things in the running game. And, you know, I love the dimensions that it could give this Jaguars offense. Hockenson, what I love about him is that he gives you all of the classic traits of an inline tight end that can block and win in line. But then he's dynamic also if you want to move him out, flex him out in space, get him in the slot, line him up in the backfield and have him run routes. You know, he just does so much for you in terms of being a classic tight end and a modern day tight end that if there's a tight end that I'm behind in the top 10, it's definitely Hawkins.
Joe Marino joining us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM Into the Night with Rick Ballew. Joe does a wonderful job along with his staff at the Draft Network. You can get everything by going to thedraftnetwork.com. All right, I want to ask you about two players before we say goodbye. Defensive players. You mentioned a tackle, a couple tackles, and the tight end. Let's begin with Ed Oliver. First off, foolish pipe dream. Is he absolutely gone by seven, or is there a chance that he could be there for the taking?
You know, I'm starting to believe he's going to go number three to the Jets, and which would put him obviously out of the running for the Jaguars or even the rumored possibility that Atlanta could move up with Detroit if he were to get to number eight. So, you know, it's my belief if he doesn't go number three, I think there's a legitimate chance he could get down that far in the draft order. And really, if Jacksonville wanted, they could take him or set up that trade scenario. But Oliver's a guy that I think is definitely worth a top 10 pick. You know, we talk about this NFL today and the way that offenses play football. It's pace and space. And being able to get quick penetration into the face of the quarterback is so valuable. And I think Ed Oliver gives you that ability at an elite level and certainly worth a top 10 pick in terms of how disruptive he can be on a defensive line.
You know, Joe, you hear from people and they'll say, well, you know, the last thing the Jaguars need, there's been a culture problem, is a guy like him coming in. He couldn't get along with his coach. Y'all remember that episode on the sideline. From everything you've been able to uncover, are there any other issues there with Ed Oliver outside of that episode?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like that whole episode was really overblown. And I actually, I went and covered the ECU-Houston game this past year and went out to Greenville, North Carolina to cover that game. And, you know, I made it my intention to spend as much time near Ed Oliver as I possibly could. And I did that. I was around him for his entire pregame portion. When from the second he walked onto the field, I was within 10 feet of him. And this is a guy who brought a lot of energy to the field during those warmups. I thought he interacted very well with his teammates and coaches. You could tell he was looked at as a leader on that group. And then, of course, he got injured the next week against Navy, and the narrative of his entire season went off script. But I was really comfortable with the player I saw. Ran into him again, obviously, at the Combine, interviewed him there. I feel really good about who Ed Oliver is as a person.
All right, last guy I'll ask you about is Montez Sweat, and we know that he's got an issue, apparently a heart issue, and I did ask Dave Caldwell. He didn't want to get specific about players, but we talked about health, and he made an interesting quote to me. He said, well, believe it or not, team doctors are usually far more right than team scouts. And he made it clear to me that he wasn't singling out this organization, but if you just go league-wide, the team doctors are typically more right than team scouts. So with that said, what's your understanding with Montez Sweat, and is there a possibility that this guy coming off the edge could be the guy that the Jags select?
You know, I think if you want to talk about culture, I get more concerned with Montez Sweat than I do, you know, certainly in Ed Oliver. Montez Sweat, obviously, the heart thing is something that's difficult to gauge how teams are dealing with that. But then there's also a couple other things that stand out with me with Montez Sweat. First of all, keep in mind, this was a Michigan State player originally. He was suspended and then ultimately left the program. Now, Coach D'Antonio at Michigan State has a history of being able to work through some troubled players. I mean, Malik McDowell played for him for 4 years, you know, so I get really nervous that situation was not able to be reconciled. Did some digging there. Sounds like there's some questionable things. And then, you know, you hear, I've talked to a lot of his teammates at Mississippi State, and they don't say bad things about him, but they don't rave about him like they do John Abram, like they do, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, even a cornerback they have there, Jamal Peters. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that worries me. And I get that he's a prototype in terms of size and athletic ability, 30 tackles for loss, 20 sacks over the last 2 years in the SEC, very good production. I just feel like there's enough strikes there that make me nervous about him actually being a top 10 pick.
Yeah, very interesting. All right. Hey, you know, this is a Saturday question, but with Nick Foles, he needs a back that he can throw to. And frankly, I don't know if they have it after Fournette when you look at Thomas Rawls and Al Blue and Benny Cunningham. What about some of these bigger names, you know, even Heisman Trophy candidates that got hurt and kind of vanished, a guy like a Bryce Love or a Rodney Anderson? Or are there some good third down backs that you could see the Jags landing, you know, Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, three that come to mind real quick. Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State. Think he's a sensational pass catcher. If you're looking for a guy that's specifically that type of guy, he lined up in the slot a ton for North Dakota State, made plays in the ball down the field. James Williams, Washington State. I think he's the best receiving back in the class. That was literally his role at Washington. Caught, you know, a ton of passes every single year. Has good hands, really able to create after the catch. I think he would be wonderful in that type of role. And then Justice Hill from Oklahoma State. Really fast guy. Really good in space. I think he gives you value between the tackles as a runner as well. But, you know, I think his bread and butter at the next level is going to be catching the football. Part of his game that I thought was underutilized at Oklahoma State, but I think that would be a big part of what he does in the NFL. So there's a ton of those type of backs. And those are the three that really pop for me.
Man, they're going to have to get one. They're going to have to get one on Saturday. All right, Joe, tell us about your mock draft and tell us what the Draft Network has scheduled now over the next 48 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. So final mock draft will come at some point on Wednesday when I feel good about it, which may come later in the day. Over at the Draft Network, obviously, we have our mock draft machine, so you can run your own simulations on the mock draft. And, of course, we're broadcasting live all 3 days from STK Steakhouse in Nashville. You can check that out on Twitter, at Draft Network LLC.
Joe, always a lot of fun. Appreciate it. And best of luck with you and your staff coming up here over the next couple of days. And we'll have you back soon to grade the Jaguars draft.
Sounds good, Rick. Thanks so much for having me.
There he goes, Joe Marino. Great stuff there, joining us out of Charlotte tonight. I really enjoy their draft network. I think it's one of the better ones that is out there. And some good stuff. All right, so some names there for some backs. Typically when I bring a draft analyst on, I try to get a little something that is not just the, hey, what's going on at number seven. But in this case, you have to believe that the Jags must get a third down back and a pass catching back in this year's draft. James Williams is the guy he mentioned. He thought it was the best pass catching back in this draft out of Washington State. So obviously out there in the Pac-12, not a lot of people around here watched him play all that much football, playing there for the Mad Scientists. Pretty interesting stuff out in nasty old Pullman. All right, let's why don't we do that? Why don't we punch out here on time, do things the correct way, and then let's come back and let's get into it a little bit. Anything you just heard Joe Marino say? Joe Marino just said he thinks it's one of the two tackles, get out of Bama, the kid out of Florida, or it's the tight end, Hawkinson. Not a lot of time left for you to get in. Thursday night, I will be on from 10 to midnight, as we'll have our draft special show on Thursday night with the Jaguars Radio Network. Of course, tomorrow night, I will be back from 7 to 9, but I got a couple of things lined up on Wednesday night's program. So I guess what I'm trying to say to you, Jaguar fans, your minutes are being wished away as well. If you have a comment on what you believe the Jaguars should do at number seven, right now is a very good opportunity for you to share your opinion. And I have wide open phone lines. 641-1010, that is the number. 641-1010. Into the Night continues. My name's Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, thank you to Joe Marino. Some good draft stuff there. Good draft talk. Getting some third down backs late in the draft that the Jags could covet. Gave us Bruce Anderson out of North Dakota State. Justice Hill out of Oklahoma State. And then James Williams played for the Cougars in Washington State under the mad scientist, Mike Leach. He caught 83 footballs last year for 613 yards. And just to kind of put things in perspective for you, I first went on to Helter Skelter. If you don't know what Helter Skelter is, it's the computer here that I run into the night. And it pulled up James Williams as a 6 foot, 205-pound back at Washington State. This is on ESPN. I then went to the phone because, again, Helter Skelter was acting up, and I pulled up his draft numbers from the combine back in February. Well, the NFL ruler had him at 5'9", 197. So how can you be 6 foot, announced by the school, and then 5'9", according to what I have here from the NFL combine? I mean, I can understand maybe 6'6", to 6'3", or maybe, I don't know, 5'9", to 5'6", but 6 foot to 5'9"? I mean, as a guy who's been around 5'10", and I think my neck has shrunk me, I think I'm about 5'9 and a hook now. I've never been confused as being a 6 footer. How does this happen? Anyway, it looks like a pretty impressive prospect. 83 receptions this past year. And, you know, that's just one of the many scenarios that I'm looking for with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that'll be a Saturday situation. I don't expect that Thursday night, obviously, in the first round. Don't expect it in round two or three on Friday. This is a deal, and the Jags don't have a fourth-round draft pick. But this is something that you would expect a little bit later on, that the Jaguars will actually go in this particular direction to get themselves a young back who can catch the football. Jags have 2 third-round picks, pick number 69, pick number 98. They do have a 4th-round pick, pick 109. It's their 5th round that they are without. So on Saturday, they will have 3 picks, a 4th-rounder, pick 109, a 6th-rounder, pick 178, and then a 7th-round pick that they got in that trade with Baltimore. I think it goes back to the old ex-offensive lineman, center guard who played out of Virginia. I can't even think of his name right now, but that pick they made a couple of years ago when they moved that offensive lineman. So I would expect one of those 3 picks coming up over the weekend, that is where the Jaguars are absolutely going to have to address a situation there at running back. And what are they going to do at running back? Because, you know, right now with Cunningham and with Rawls and with Alfred Blue, I just don't feel comfortable enough that they really have a third down back that can catch the football a lot. At least they haven't been asked to do all that much of it. I mean, Benny Cunningham, I think, caught one ball a year ago. Albert Blue has been a third down back, so hasn't Thomas Rawls, but they haven't caught the ball nearly as enough that, you know, you would think that that is the answer, unless there's some hidden results there that frankly we just haven't seen previously in their NFL careers. A couple of other things that Joe Marino said, who joined us moments ago, that I thought was very interesting, is the Ed Oliver situation. He believes the Jaguars are drafting either the 2 very talented offensive linemen, you know, are they going to go in either one of those directions offensively, are the Jaguars. You know, I don't believe that Juwan Taylor is a better offensive fit right now, or Jonah Williams is a better offensive fit right now than I do TJ Hawkinson. Now, I also have always said this, and I'll always maintain it, that judging the offensive line is the most difficult position to do in all of the National Football League, in college football as well. I think we all have pretty good eyes on what we see skill position-wise, whether it's a back, a wide receiver, a tight end, or a quarterback. Last night I talked in great detail about Telvin Smith and how he had a down year. But when there are things that are in the trenches, that's tougher for us to understand because of double teams, because of defensive schemes, stunting, whatever. You know, not every team plays a man-to-man style. There's different techniques and schemes involved, whether it's zone blocking, whether it's man-to-man principles, things along those lines. And that's why the Pro Football Focus, when they do rank things and you bring in the analytics to football, I think that they are telling in a lot of areas, particularly skill position-wise, but I think it's very confusing to look at things as far as an offensive lineman. And from most that I have spoken with, this is not a dominant year for offensive tackles. You may not have an offensive tackle go until, let's say, 13 in this year's draft. And then you're going to have a large push where you could have 4 or 5 offensive linemen go in the next, you know, 4 or 5 of them go in the next 7 or 8 spots. It's really an offensive line draft class where don't expect a lot of guys to go high. You know, it may not be until number 13 when it's all said and done. You know, just as surprising is this defensive backfield draft. You may not have a cornerback go until pick number 20. When's the last time we've had an NFL draft where you haven't had a corner go until the top 20? And in this case, a tackle going in the top 13. I mean, there are people out there who believe that when you rank offensive positions, after the quarterback, you'll get a healthy argument out of what is number 2. The left tackle, the cover corner, or the pass rush defensive end. Well, this is a very heavy defensive line draft, and they're coming off the board at nearly a record pace in the first round. But tackles, and in this case, we're talking about Taylor, who's been mostly a right tackle, And Williams, who played right tackle as a freshman at Bama, then got more than half his starts in his career as a left tackle. Some project him to actually be a guard. And then you're not having a cornerback selected until maybe player number 20. That's just how unusual this year's draft class is. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is if there is a trade and a team or two moves up, all of a sudden the possibility of Ed Oliver being there for the Jaguars at number 7 is a real possibility. The two reasons why I've always liked T.J. Hockenson. Number one, he's extremely explosive, and the Jaguars just really struggle at that particular position. And again, completions and attempts have been at a record low, and they did not address that during the offseason. Caldwell said yesterday when we met with him, he believes they've done enough and that, I don't want to use the word set here, but they've done enough where they can compete at right tackle. Obwaye, or how do we decide we're going to call this young man's name?
Obwaye.
Obwaye. Okay, Cedric Obwaye. You had the redshirt year of Will Richardson. They just picked up a kid the other day from Tampa, and you remember that's where George Yarno was, a new offensive line coach, coming over from Tampa, and he brings over another guy. So you know, all of a sudden, there's three new bodies there at right tackle. So you know, I think the Jaguars believe they can go out and field the team, and one of those three is going to be good enough. And who knows? Maybe they address right tackle in the second round. You know, maybe that's pick number 38 for the Jacksonville Jaguars. A right tackle there. But the two reasons why I like that with Hockenson is for that particular reason there. And then number two, you have to believe what many people out there have said. He appears to be the safest player in this year's draft. And you can't take comments like that lightly. People are really gushing about this man at the next level. I've never been a... Well, they missed on this guy. They could have had Russell Wilson. They could have had Patrick Mahomes. I hate playing that game. But I'm already kind of contradicting myself by falling into that category now. That if the Jaguars sputter on offense and this kid goes somewhere else, because he's not going ahead of them, he's going to be there for the taking. And he goes behind them. And he lights it up for another organization. To me, that's going to be a very difficult pill to swallow. Because I think we all would be in agreement. The reason why they don't select him is not that they don't think that he can play. It's because the tight end isn't worthy of the 7th player available. And I think this organization, where they are, coming off a 5-11 season, where they spent $88 million on a quarterback, you've got to get this guy some weapons. And I know others are saying, well, you also need an offensive line, Baloo. Okay, I got you. You only have one pick here. I got it. I'm taking the tight end. That's what I'm doing. And if not, I'd love to go defense there if Ed Oliver was available. If he's not available, and they don't go T.J. Hockenson, who the heck knows what they're going to do? I don't think they're taking a tackle. I really don't. If that's not the situation, then who knows where this organization is going? I honestly don't think they're taking a tackle at number 7. I think it's Ed Oliver Falls or T.J. Hockenson. We shall see. Lots more to uncover before this thing is all said and done. All right, I do want to grab some of your phone calls on this, and as well, we'll come back in our second hour, and we got much more to dive into tonight. But thank you to Joe Marino. That was good stuff. Getting him on to give us the very latest on what is going on, including some late round picks there as far as running backs. Hey, a big event coming up, brought to you by our good folks at Remedy It's the Workers' Memorial Ceremony, and it will be this Friday at 10 a.m. over at the Northeast Florida Safety Council. They're honoring those who have lost their lives while on the job. They're trying to raise awareness about workplace safety, which is especially important. So connect with Tom Boss, and he is Remedy Safety Director. I always tell you to just go to Remedy Staffing. You can get all the details there. But this is a great event. Go to remedystaff.com. And again, raising awareness. Can't think of things that would be too much worse than that, being injured on the job. It would be this Friday at 10 a.m. at the Northeast Florida Safety Council. All right, our second hour is coming up. We got much more to get into. Hour number two with Rick Ballew next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Ah, yes, the Rolling Stones. They were supposed to be here tomorrow night. Would have been a pretty good start to a long party weekend here in Jacksonville. Yeah, I'm looking for a buzz. I really am. I'm looking for a Thursday night buzz because I'm going to be on with you beginning at 10. That's going to be midway through the first round. Now, who gives this city a buzz on Thursday night? Is there a name available in this year's draft class that gives Jacksonville a buzz? You're not grabbing a quarterback. And I say that because I think I know what I'm talking about, even though, as I talked about in hour number one, 11 of the last 12 quarterbacks that have been selected in the first round, teams have moved up to get. And just look at the pattern last year of all the teams that spent big money on quarterbacks, yet still went out, moved up in a trade, and drafted a quarterback. And if you look at the three teams who have really added this year via free agency, Jaguars, Dolphins, and Broncos, I think a lot of people believe that Denver is absolutely drafting a quarterback. Miami is absolutely drafting a quarterback. For some reason, Jacksonville is the exception to the rule. And maybe that's a good thing if they can win with Nick Foles. You know, going to fill in parts around him. But, you know, where's the biggest buzz going to come? Is it Ed Oliver? You know, is it T.J. Hockenson? I kind of get a feel now that with T.J. Hockenson, it's a little bit of like a cult type of following. I mean, come on. I'm talking to folks here in the Deep South. You don't watch a Pam Ward, Tommy Bowden televised Iowa Purdue game at high noon on Saturday. I mean, you can't fool me. I'm going to stack the freaking pads on you, all right? Pam Ward, here comes Iowa. Iowa's coming off their 16th consecutive 7-5 season. Late arriving crowd this nooner. Let's bring in my colleague, Tommy Bowden. Who the hell watches Iowa play football? This is what I love about the draft, though. It's like all of a sudden everyone's on board. Everyone, have you ever watched TJ? No, but I saw a highlight of him. I'm on. I'm in. It's great. It's the best part of it. It really is. I absolutely love this. We are broadcasting live. Good afternoon, everyone. Beth Mowens with you. Let's bring in my colleague, Jerry DiNardo. It's Iowa and Indiana. And whenever Iowa plays Indiana, you just take everything and you throw it straight out the window. I mean, that's what's great about it. It really is. People around here didn't watch him play. But I think he's got the cult-like following. I do. I mean, there are so many Jag fans who are Gator fans. Even the most diehard Gator fans that I know are like, who's Juwan Taylor? Did he really play for the University of Florida? And these are Gator fans. I've yet to have a Gator fan, and I talk with them all the time. I've yet to have one come up to me and say, he's the guy they got to get. Next one who tells me that will be the first one. Now, the Jonah Williams situation is intriguing as well. Again, the guy came in and played as a true freshman, as a right tackle. Then he moved over to left tackle. But a lot of people envision him becoming a guard at the NFL level. Reminds me of the Isaiah Swan conversations that we heard of a year ago. The young man out of Georgia who hurt his knee, went down in the month of August for the New England Patriots, slated now to be the left tackle this year. Those two huge left tackles went and signed the richest contracts to date. Nate Solder 2 years ago in New York, and of course, Brown just left and went to Oakland. Another Gator, heaviest man in the league. So let's talk about the draft. Let's grab some calls, but you know, while you're at it, I sense it being flat. I don't think that there is a situation where there's a guy out there that this organization can draft where this fan base is going to stand up and be like, all right, we got our guy. And it's absolutely not going to be the case if they draft either one of those two tackles. I think a little bit with Hawkinson because that's kind of been the convenient thing to do. People are falling into the we need a tight end category. Maybe the biggest one would be if Ed Oliver slipped. But our guest earlier, Joe Marino, thinks when it's all said and done, he's going to the Jets at number three. Jets could be ripe, oh, by the way, for a trade because they have Sam Darnold from a year ago. That could be a situation where, you know, possibly a team panics and believes they got to move up to get a quarterback there. Let's grab a couple of calls. 641-1010. Let's kick it off with Steve. Steve, welcome to Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
How you doing, Mr. Ballew?
I am okay.
Rick, I don't think Hawkinson is going to be there. And the reason I'm thinking this is the Patriots got a lot of draft picks. I think the Patriots, and they're going to need a tight end. You know, with Gronk gone, I think they will trade up to get up there to get where they can get Hawkinson. That's my feeling with Belichick. They used a tight end with Gronk gone. This guy is supposed to be, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. He does it all. That's my scenario that I think is going to happen. I don't think we're going to have a chance to get him.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because obviously the Patriots have been known as an organization forever that has done nothing but trade down. But this may be the 1 year that they actually, in fact, trade up because they've got 12 draft picks. And, you know, that's just too many. They're not going to bring 12 new rookies onto their active roster. So they're going to have to reduce that at least a little bit. Pittsburgh's got 10 draft picks as well. So those are a couple of teams to possibly look at that could make a move. And there are rumblings this year in New England that they are considering doing that. But I still think it's the offensive line, man. They've gotten absolutely crushed there. They also lost a lot off the defensive line, I mean, including their best pass rusher in Trey Flowers. So I think you're on to something, but I honestly believe, Steve, that if they do make that move and trade up, they're going to go for a pass rush defensive end.
You think so?
I do.
All righty. We're going to find out Thursday night.
We will, Steve. Thank you. Appreciate you getting in. Yeah, I mean, that's how weird things are this year. And, you know, you just kind of look around now. After the Frank Clark deal that went in, all of a sudden Seattle's got the 21st and 29th pick in the first round. We know about the Oakland Raiders. They have three first-round picks, the 4th, the 24th, the 27th. The Giants have the 6th and 17th pick in the draft. I think that story is one that I just do not understand. Again, you're not going to get your quarterback at 6, but you're going to settle on him at 17? And Joe Marino made a pretty good observation when I asked him about that. If you're in love with a guy, you know, if there's just a guy at six that, you know, let's say he's a Jalen Ramsey type of talent, and you just feel like you have to get him, and obviously the Giants need help on that defensive line. If there's a defensive lineman available that they just believe they can't get away from, they have to pick him, then maybe, yeah. But is your second first-round draft pick getting a quarterback? It's one thing to acquire a pick later. Like, you know, let's say Baltimore did a year ago with Lamar Jackson. That's one deal. To move up, create a draft pick. But to have two and to say, this is going to be our franchise quarterback. We're saying about Eli Manning. He's our future. But, yeah, we'd rather have a defensive lineman at six. That just doesn't work with me. You know, I don't agree with that philosophy. I just don't. Let's go to Dale. He's next up, Into the Night with Rick Ballew. Hi, Dale.
Yes. It's following up on the other guy's question. The Pats will get the top tight end in the league, mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they got the 12 drafts, and like you said, they can trade up, trade down.
Yeah.
And they have the ability to do that. We have seven. I think that 12 is New York Giants in the Pats.
Right.
They will get it. And I'm talking about their team. I'm not their fan or anything. But it bothers me. It's not a Super Bowl team. I mean, they can kill it. They can get it.
Yeah.
And I understand our team needs offensive protected quarterback, obviously. And I mean, the question is, it's just they have the strength and the power in the organization to just get the best tight end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we need a tight end. Also, I believe on our team. I guess that's the question. But I'm not saying we should get it in the seventh round or whatever.
Yeah. Well, they're going to address it. I'd be shocked if the Jaguars don't get out of here with you know, a tight end, a wide receiver, and an offensive tackle. I think those are three positions right there that you can absolutely look at and say that they need to address. But I also think they need a back. And we just talked about that with Joe Marino. They, at one point, had one of the deepest defensive lines in the NFL, where they were eight deep. And they were very solid. All of a sudden, those numbers are dwindling. I mean, you moved Fowler, you cut Malik. You know, you're coming up on the huge deal here for Yannick. You got Calais Campbell, who's a year older. They brought back Darius, which I liked. We don't know about Taven Bryan. Yeah, I mean, listen. If you don't get a defensive lineman, a three technique like Ed Oliver, or address that in the second round, what you're saying again is that you have faith that Taven Bryan is going to be the guy at three technique for you this year because you lost Malik Jackson. And, you know, see, what really sucks is that if you draft a three technique, you don't get your tight end. Well, if you draft a tight end, you don't get your right tackle. If you draft the right tackle, you don't get your three technique. You understand what I'm saying? It's like you've got three huge holes that I see. And that's just my opinion. What about the others out there who believe you should move Telvin Smith and move Jack to weak side? Well, then you need a middle linebacker. And I know they got Jake Ryan. He's coming off an injury. Again, you filled it up with bodies. You went out and you got a couple of tight ends. You went out and you got a receiver in Connolly. You went out and you got a couple of tackles. You still have the redshirt kid, Will Richardson, who didn't play a year ago. Okay? But we don't know anything. These are all huge question marks. The guy they got from Cincinnati was a turnstile. Former first-round draft pick out of Texas A&M. I mean, to me, that's a massive reclamation project. And it hasn't worked with some projects they tried before, including Eric Flowers. That didn't necessarily work. That was another former first-round draft pick. A lot of holes on this team. You know, I'm not going to make myself popular with this opinion. But if there was ever a year that Jacksonville could move down just a few spots and acquire another top 70 pick, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'd move from 7 to 10 or 7 to 11 if you can give me an additional. And now, what can they fetch for that? Can they get a second-round pick? Can they get something in the top 50, top 60, where they have to settle on a third-round pick? I don't care. That third-round pick that they gave up, you know, they have two third-round picks. They got the one in the deal that they made for Dante Fowler. But, you know, you used a fifth-round pick on Carlos Hyde. All of a sudden, that really hurts. You know? That one all of a sudden stings a little bit, the Carlos Hyde pick. But I absolutely would. If you could acquire a second-round pick or a third-round pick by moving down spots, I absolutely would do that this year. And I know that, again, that's not going to make myself any friends out there, but I would rather have five picks in the top 98 than four, because this team needs at least five good football players. And just remember one thing, how deep this team was a year ago before we headed this break. Remember last year's draft class. When they opened up the season and got things rolling, the only one who really was a difference maker or a guy who really contributed on day one was a seventh-round pick in Leon Jacobs and a seventh-round pick in Logan Cook. Taven Bryan? No. DJ Chark? Special teams. Ronnie Harrison? Special teams. Will Richardson didn't even dress. Tanner Lee didn't even dress. So it was a different dimension. Last year, the thought, and some boneheads, including myself, thought that this team was going to play for a Super Bowl. They didn't even get the contributions out of their first and second round and third round pick or fourth round pick last year. This year, Totally different ballgame. You need your first, second, and both your third round picks to come on in and contribute immediately. More on this, more phone calls coming up. We continue to go into the night with Rick Ballew.
Into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we've got a 10 o'clock tonight. James Coleman, Denny Thompson will join you then. Le'Veon Bell, a no-show. Day one of the voluntary OTAs for the New York Jets. Adam Gase asked about it. His quote, it's voluntary. That's what it is. It's the CBA. End of quote. Pretty easy, huh? Pretty easy. Question, then answer. Wonder how the New York media is handling this. But he was a no-show. OBJ going to Cleveland. He was there for day one, the first day. And remember, you know, Cleveland and New York, they get to open earlier than Jacksonville. If you have a first-year head coach, the way the NFL rules are written within the collective bargaining agreement, there's more time during the offseason if you do have a new head coach. And the reason for that is because a new head coach is – obviously, bringing in a completely new system, new philosophy, offensive, defensive scheme, which the way I look at it, and I know I'm kind of old school, more of the reason why Le'Veon Bell should be there. Isn't that more of the reason why OBJ should be there. I mean, brand new coaches, brand new teams. But they are a couple of superstars. They are a couple of divas, and they are exercising their right, which is written into the collective bargaining agreement. It's voluntary. And they're exercising that right. OBJ was there for day one when things opened up in Cleveland, but apparently since then he left and went back to Los Angeles to work out. And he's been in L.A. ever since. And again, I mean, listen, that's fine. It's April. If he wants to do that, fine. Jalen wants to do it, fine. If Le'Veon Bell wants to do it, fine. I think there's a difference between Jalen and OBJ. Jalen's been here for 3 years. Jalen is still working under the same defensive coordinator. Okay, there is a new defensive backs coach. Working under the same head coach. Working under the same general manager. Working under the same president of football operations. OBJ's brand new in Cleveland. Le'Veon Bell just sat out the entire year. And he's not in New York. I guess what I'm trying to say to you is if I was a Jets fan, yeah, I'd be pretty pissed off about this. I really would. If I was a Browns fan, I would be pretty PO'd by this. I think there's a clear difference between what these two guys are doing in New York and in Cleveland, respectively, than what you have here with Jalen Ramsey and Jacksonville. And this is not a situation where it's me just being, oh, you're a local Jags guy, you're just not going to say anything negative about you. No, it's not that way at all. I honestly believe that way. I think I told each and every one of you last night that I actually do have a problem with Telvin Smith not being here. Because Telvin didn't have a good year, and I think he should be back working hard. And I would have had a huge problem if Leonard Fournette, after all of the problems that he had gone through, if he elected not to get here. That would have been a situation as well for me. But anyway, to each their own. Adam Gase can do whatever he wants. Is he going to be able to control Le'Veon Bell in New York? Makes you wonder. Freddie Kitchens, first-year head coach, he can be able to control OBJ? That makes you wonder. I got news on both New York and Cleveland, which I'll share for you coming up in just a couple of minutes when we get to Truth Teller News and Notes. But first things first, can I get a freaking foghorn? Because what is going on right now in Boston is this. The good guys 4, the bad guys 1. Bruins up 4-1, 2 minutes and 18 seconds remaining in the third period. It doesn't get any better, ladies and gentlemen, than a Game 7 in the National Hockey League playoffs. And, you know, you get another opportunity tonight with Dallas and Las Vegas. They'll have Game 7. That's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. And then tomorrow night you'll have Carolina visiting the District of Columbia. Game 7 there for the defending Stanley Cup champion, Washington Capitals. But, you know, I have always said this, and I'll always maintain it, and I can't wait to go home. Actually, I can wait to go home but because I'm enjoying myself with you folks tonight on the radio. But when I get home to watch a Game 7, it is so incredibly special, the sudden death variety. And I think it's the best sporting event that you have ever seen. The poor Toronto Maple Leafs. They have not won a Stanley Cup since 1967. You have to understand that Toronto is one of the original 6. And this is supposed to be one of the great organizations in all of hockey. And they really have become the Cleveland Browns of the National Hockey League. They are the modern-day losers. They have not won it since 1967. And those folks in Toronto right now are absolutely beside themselves because there's nothing more important to those people than the Maple Leafs. And I really thought they were the better team in this series. I've watched every minute, whether it's been live or going home and watching it after the fact. I thought Boston with special teams was the better team either on the power play or when they were shorthanded. But I thought that Frederik Jakobsen was better between the pipes than Tuukka Rask. And I thought that in five-on-five hockey, Toronto was better than Boston, but Boston just really turned it on tonight. They were the dominant team. Just let me check real quick. I told you a night ago how they swallow the whistles in a game seven. If I'm reading this correctly, we've had 60 minutes of hockey tonight, not one penalty. That's the way the games are. And again, that's the difference between a seven-game series and something on ice and on the hardwood. Because I know superstars get calls in the NBA playoffs. But that's always been the biggest problem with that game. And I'm not, I guess I am comparing them. I guess what I'm really just trying to do is just give 2 minutes worth of love to hockey. That's it. Then I'll get back to football. I promise. I'll get back to football in 20 seconds. But I'm just trying to give a little bit of love to hockey. And this is one main area within this sport that is just so incredibly out of this world. That they do not blow the whistle in a game seven. They let you go out and they let you play. And in the NBA, they still call fouls and it's free throws and it's timeouts and it takes forever to play the fourth quarter. Just like it takes forever to play the end of the second half in a college basketball game. And if that's one thing that basketball could do for the future of both those sports is fix end game. Baseball, you see what you get. Football, you see what you get. Hockey, you don't see what you don't get because they swallow their whistles and they let them play. I just watched the last minute here. They've been beating the tar out of each other. And the refs refuse to blow the whistle. NBA, uh-uh. Ticky-tack fouls, free throws, timeout. One free throw, timeout. Supposed to be on the hook, you call a timeout, get it at half court. I mean, it's really kind of ruined the game. My opinion. All right, let's wrap it up tonight by getting to Truth Teller News and Notes. We'll do that coming up on the other side. They get you ready for Denny and James. They'll take over at 10 o'clock right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, the Magic season has come to an end. The Toronto Raptors. They still Toronto out there?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just kidding. Just trying to have some fun with Kawhi Leonard.
Up in Drake Land.
The fact that their hockey team has the longest drought of any in the National Hockey League, spanning now 53 seasons. The Boston Bruins own the Toronto Maple Leafs. Are you kidding me? Oh, Causeway Street right now has got to be going absolutely ballistic. Game 7, Bruins played their best in this Game 7. But Toronto is a winner tonight in hoops. Because when I think Toronto, I think basketball. They do shut down the Orlando Magic. 115-96. Get that series clinched in 5. Let's give you all the scores. Let's give you everything that's happening in the world. We like to call it Truth Teller News and Notes. Brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com, based right here in Jacksonville. Unbelievable law firm that's there for you. Hopefully you'll never have to use them. But if so, if anyone that you are aware of has been severely hurt, or even if it was fatal and it happened out on the road, car accident caused by a truck, an RV, a tractor trailer, anything on those lines, bus, just go to TruckCrashLaw.com. You're the only law firm in the state of Florida where this is all they do. Their expertise. TruckCrashLaw.com. Wonderful people. Make sure you get to them today. Charles Barkley's been all over Joel Embiid. He's got 23-13 and a couple of dishes as well. A couple of dimes, excuse me. Come on, Blue. Get with the verbiage here. Philadelphia. A commanding 78-46 lead over the Brooklyn Nets. So that game ongoing. Of course, Spurs and Nuggets coming up. As a matter of fact, it is tipped. And then late night, ton of pressure right now on Russell Westbrook. All of a sudden, can't shoot. Portland up 3-1 over OKC in the best of seven there. So that's updating you what is going on tonight in the NBA. Of course, on ice, the Bruins took care of the Maple Leafs 5-1. Got up to a 2-0 lead and scored with their third and fourth line tonight, which is pretty cool. Both Johansson and Nordstrom, Curley a fourth liner as well, scored. Patty Bergeron added an empty netter for that Old Town team. And they end up winning it 5-1, 3 in the third, so they win it 5-1. They move on to take on Columbus. Coming up in 20 minutes, it'll be the Golden Knights of Las Vegas going into San Jose to take on the Sharks. You get a Game 7 there. You're staying up late night and you're not listening to Denny and James. I'm going to have it on for them here. I know they're huge hockey fans. At least they will be tonight because you get a Game 7. And then tomorrow night, you get a Game 7 in the District of Columbia between the Washington Capitals and the Carolina Hurricanes. There's nothing better in sports, period, than a Game 7. All right, plenty of other things that are going on. You know, just looking at the money here involved for Frank Clark, 5 years, $105.5 million, $63.5 million guaranteed. It's more money than Dexter Lawrence. I said this back in our first hour. You look at the last 3 years, and Clark is a year older than Yannick Ngakoue. He was selected in the second round of the 2015 NFL draft. Last 3 years, Clark, 31 sacks, 66 quarterback hits. Ngakoue last 3 years, 29.5 sacks, 70 quarterback hits. I mean, as I said, I'm a huge numbers guy, but I am not a salary cap numbers guy. I'm just trying to figure out how they're going to get Ngakoue signed and how they're going to get Jalen Ramsey signed. And I'm not even talking about Jack right now, Miles Jack. I'm talking about these two. And it's really never been an issue around here. But that's how great teams win. Great teams win with the draft, and then they win by signing contracts to players a second time over or a third time over. You know, and you look at this latest tenure of the Jacksonville Jaguars. The only guys that I can think of on their roster right now who they drafted, who they have actually re-signed, are Telvin Smith, Brandon Linder, Marquise Lee, and how come I believe there's one more? I'm talking about players that they drafted and they have re-signed. That may actually be it. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else on this team. They brought back A.J. Cann. So, you know, they allowed him to be a free agent and brought him back. So I guess technically that would live up to that particular scenario. So you've got A.J. Cann, and that's it. Unless I'm missing out on it, I can't think of anyone else on this roster who they drafted who is still a part of this football team. Even that very good draft that they had with Blake Bortles. Bortles is now gone. TJ Yeldon is now gone. Sample is gone. And that wasn't their great draft. Their great draft was probably the, oh gosh, what was it? I don't have anything in front of me here. Was it the 2014? Was it the 2015 draft? What was a very good draft that they ended up having, where they got all the wide receivers? I don't know. I'm
pretty sure that was the same year as Bortles, wasn't it? 14.
Which year did they get Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns? Allen Hurns was a free agent that they got off the street.
Yeah, that was the 2014 draft. Yep,
that was 2014. And they got Allen Robinson in that draft class.
They got Robinson, Lee, and of course, like you just said, Hurns in undrafted free agency.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm just trying to remember. I thought that was the case. Brandon Linder as well ended up going, I believe, in that draft class. So
also Telvin, too, that year.
Yep, those are really the only guys that are that are back. But, you know, wait a minute. What am I missing right here? I'm looking at the 2014 draft. It says maybe the Jaguars made a mistake. It says Blake Bortles, TJ Yeldon, AJ Can, James Sample, Rashad Green, Michael Bennett, Neil Sterling, Ben Koyak in 2014. Ah, they made a mistake. They got 15s draft in for 14s draft. Ah. All right. Because in 15, they got Fowler, Yeldon, Can, Sample, Green, Bennett, Sterling, Koyak. And then in 14, they got Bortles, Yeldon, Can, Sample, Green, Bennett, Sterling, and Koyak. So they must have made a mistake. It clearly couldn't have been me. Yeah, 14 was the year that they had Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns. What? They had Brandon Linder. They had Telvin Smith. So really outside of that draft class, that has been about it for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But that's how you get better. And again, 29.5 sacks for Ngakoue. It's amazing to think about how much money he's going to end up making when it's all said and done. All right, OBJ taking massive shots at now the New York Giants as he stepped away. Why is it that when people leave an organization, they feel as though they have to take shots as to where they once were? And, you know, we're seeing this basically with divas in the NFL. We saw it a great deal when it did take place recently with Antonio Brown leaving Pittsburgh and going to Oakland. And now we're seeing with OBJ. I mean, both guys wanted out. Both guys wanted out for numerous reasons. But why, when you make a move like that and something happens and you get a fresh start on life, why do people always feel that they have to turn around and destroy where they actually had some good years? And I've never been able to understand that. But that is what's going on right now with OBJ. I mean, what he came out and what he said was really disappointing, but... You know, again, here's a guy that's ripping his former organization, and he's doing it while he's hanging out in Los Angeles. He's not even breaking bread and doing things with his new teammates right now in Cleveland. So he's saying, all I want to do is win. That's why I left New York. Yet he's working out on his own in Los Angeles, and he's not with his teammates in Cleveland. It just really smells to me. I don't know how I'm going to handle the Cleveland situation. I think as we move forward, I'm still really pissed that they got four primetime games. A year ago, Jacksonville only got two, and they were flexed out of one. And what the Jaguars did during the 2017 season was enough, in my opinion, that should have warranted some respect. And they didn't get any. They got two Thursday night games, or I guess one was a Sunday night game, and that second one they were flexed out of. Now here's Cleveland stealing all the headlines, and they get four. I know it's not their fault, but still I don't like it. And I'm going to exercise my right to continue to dislike the Cleveland Browns. And that's pretty much going to be my agenda heading into the 2019 season. All right, final thought on this. I thought Peter King made an excellent point. They're beginning to talk about adversity now for Kyler Murray and whether or not he's going to be able to handle it. The story that Peter King wrote was tremendous. If you look at the last 7 years of Kyler Murray, in games that he started, high school, Texas A&M, and, of course, Oklahoma, 57-3. How's he going to handle things when they start losing, no matter where he goes? I mean, rookie quarterbacks, for the most part, don't win. It takes a while. It's a rare exception to see a Pat Mahomes in year two win. Look at rookie quarterbacks a year ago. Did they win? Baker Mayfield. Did he win? Did Josh Allen win in Buffalo? Did Josh Rosen win in Arizona? Did Sam Darnold win in New York? No. Rookie quarterbacks don't win in the NFL. Kyler Murray is 57-3 in his last 60. It's a great point by Peter King, and it's honestly one that I didn't give much consideration to, but I do think it is, in fact, valid. All right, there you go. Truth Teller, news and notes, brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com, only law firm in the state of Florida where something has gone wrong and there's been an injury or a death out on the road, brought to you by a car you know, in a car brought to you by a tractor trailer, an RV, a bus, a truck, go to the only law firm, that's truckcrashlaw.com, based right here in Jacksonville. They are there for you if there's been an injury or a death. Make sure you know, truckcrashlaw.com.
Now, the two-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Waiting in line is so 2018. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
All right, Denny Thompson is here. You know, see what I have circled here?
What you got here, man? What you got?
I'm trying to make a point about the Frank Clark signing and the re-signing of Yannick Ngakoue and how much it's going to cost. And I'm trying to think of guys who the Jags drafted, they re-signed. Look at a 14 and 15 draft from the Jaguars, and what does it say? Look at picks two down.
What we got?
In the years 2014 and 2015.
We got A.J. Cann, still on the roster. That's it. We got...
Look at the names in 14 and 15.
Yeah. What am I looking at? I mean, they're terrible.
But they're the same names in both years.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm trying to make a point about like Telvin Smith and Brandon Linder.
What is this? Did they give this to y'all yesterday?
And Allen Robinson and you know, and I'm like, look, and I'm sitting here looking at it, I'm like, Baloo, did you take too many freaking meds today or what? Just look at 2014 and 2015 and find Telvin Smith and they're not there. They're the same names. James Sample, Rashad Green, Michael Bennett, Neil Sterling, and I'm like, the Jaguars freaking screwed up. And as a result, I screwed up my segment.
Was that the
pre-draft
thing?
They handed it to us yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot to RSVP for that.
Draft notes.
I didn't know you had RSVP.
I mean, there's only been 24 drafts.
I know.
I can't rip them because I'm friends with them all. They're good guys over there. We all make mistakes. I know diehard Jaguar fans said, oh, Blue, you should know every pick they have. You should have it logged in your head right now. I mean, here you are ripping on Toronto. The Bruins beat Toronto. Toronto hasn't won a Stanley Cup championship in 52 years. You knew that, but you didn't know who they selected in 2014.
Somebody told us last night, by the way, that there's only been one American win player of the year in hockey.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody told us that last night. Is that true?
Was it Bobby Carpenter? Who did they say it was? Patrick Kane for the Chicago Blackhawks. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a sport that's been dominated by Canada.
That's crazy, though.
Yep.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right, so when are you going to make your prediction, final prediction on who the Jags pick?
I'm going to make it when I get on here at 10 o'clock on Thursday night.
Hopefully they've picked.
I'm going to make it tomorrow night.
Are you?
I'm down to two guys. I'm down to Ed Oliver and TJ Hockenson.
I'm down to two as well. Well, okay. Yeah, you're talking about who you think they will pick, not who they should pick, right?
Well, I think they should pick I would pick TJ Hockenson.
Yeah?
That's who I would pick. I want a tight end that I think can change the game.
I'm good with that as long as Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver, and Devin White aren't there. If any three of those are there, I think Devin White changes the game for Jacksonville.
But he's not slipping by Tampa.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right.
And all this Quinnen Williams stuff all of a sudden with him dropping. That changes the dynamic. See, I'm under the behalf that those two are gone. I'm thinking there's a sneaky suspicion that the Jets could trade out.
It's interesting when you look at the moves today, and we're going to talk about this tonight. You look at what Seattle did today. They could be loading up to come up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they let a D-lineman go. It's a D-lineman strong draft, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can trade those two first-rounders, and what would you have to give? If you came way up, you have to give those two and maybe a next year's second, this year's third or something.
Right.
Right? Come all the way up, and then you get one of these stud defensive end rush guys on another rookie contract. And really, it's the only way that you can operate when you give Russell Wilson the world.
It is, and Oakland's got three first-rounders. The Giants have a couple of first-rounders. The Patriots have 12 picks, and Pittsburgh has 10. And New England's actually rumored this year as being a team that, for like the first time in their life, is considering moving up.
I heard that today, too, on NFL Network. That was, kind of caught me by surprise.
I think they need to pass rush end.
Not to keep you here longer than you need to
no,
be.
No, I don't mind being here at all.
You know what I'm surprised by?
Obviously, I can't drive home. I'm drunk after reading the Jaguars draft notes.
Sit on in for another 2 hours. Sober up a little bit. The Colts. Didn't you think they would do more in the offseason with all the money they had?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are they holding the money for? Quentin Nelson, I can't think of many young guys. They don't have the Jack situation from 2 years ago where we thought Ngakoue, Jack, Telvin, Ramsey, like we got to load up to sign all these guys. They don't have that situation. What are they sitting on?
No, in you know, when they had Gregson, it was a disaster. But do you remember when Dave Caldwell got here and he hung on to his money for a very, very, very long time?
Yep.
And people were impatient, and people were like, you know, what are you waiting for? I think that's the same thing now that's going on in Indy, is just because they have it, do they have to spend it? Why not wait until you think that you have
but you know what the difference is?
The right players?
They got the quarterback.
Well, they certainly do.
Like, that window's not going to be there forever.
Yeah, but
we didn't have the quarterback here.
But if he can stay healthy, I mean, you just look at Roethlisberger and Rivers and Breeze and Brady and quarterbacks like that. I mean, he could barely throw a year ago. And look at what he did last year. So, I don't know. But they rave about that organization as one of the best right now in all of football.
Yeah, we'll see. We got the guys from Performance Enhanced Jags Talk in. We do that every year.
Okay.
So, they're going to come in and talk. They do a full seven-round mock.
Awesome.
And the last couple of years, they've hit on a couple, which is hard to do in rounds three, four, five, six. You know, and they've done that. So, we bring them in every year, hear what they got to say. They don't seem to be as optimistic as they have been the last couple of years, though.
Well, you know, I made the point earlier tonight, no matter what the Jaguars do Thursday night, is it going to create a buzz in this city? Is this really a buzzless draft, regardless of who they select?
Man, you can't fool me that many times.
Mm.
Can't win the offseason.
Well, I don't even know if it's fool me. I don't know if there's a guy out there that they select, even if it is Ed Oliver, even if it was TJ, that all of a sudden, like, Jag fans are like, that's it, we got our guy.
They'd have to have a draft like they had a couple years ago where they went Jalen Miles.
Yeah.
Like, they'd have to have something fall. They'd have to go like Hockenson and have Josh Jacobs fall.
No.
You know, something like that. Or go Ed Oliver and have Noah Font fall.
Yeah.
I think that'd create a buzz.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I'd be interested with if they have a back going late. We had a draft analyst on tonight who gave us three backs. This kid, James Williams, who caught 83 balls last year for Washington State. They had him listed at 6 foot on the Washington State roster. The combine measured him at 5'9". How does that happen?
Wow.
That's be like me recognizing James Coleman for you.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
All right, here they go. Denny and James coming up right now. Matt LaVey produced it. Folks, have a great night. We're back tomorrow evening at our regular time. That'll be 7 until 9 on Wednesday night's program right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. My name's Rick Blue. Have a great night.